This is The Story of a Maple, Part 2, part of an archived broadcast, The Nature of Things, originally aired on September 4th, 1992.
My grand old maple tree at 4481 Dublin Road became a foot-high stump and some 7.5 cords of firewood on August 11th, 1992, when everything but the stump was removed on the next day, leaving a gap in the shade like a missing tooth. I took my measuring equipment to try to learn something of its life. As I looked at the stump, the first thing I noticed was that the trunk was not just brown, but was fluted or scalloped. Four measurements taken from the core of the tree to the wide parts of these lobes showed an average radius of 23 inches. Four measurements taken from the core to the sinuses or indentations showed an average radius of almost 18 inches. Using this calculation, the average diameter would be 41 inches. Interestingly enough, if you use a forester's diameter tape, the average diameter would be 46 inches because the tape misses the indentations. After much counting and recounting, I've decided that the tree's date of birth, so to speak, was 1906. This would amount to an average diameter growth of about 1/5 of an inch per year in the sinuses and over 1/2 inch diameter growth per year in the lobes. That's pretty good growth. What's more, during its last 10 years of life, its growth topped the average for the younger years. Despite some weaknesses, this old patriarch was healthy. Now, looking at that tree and what it can tell us about its life and times. For the first 6 or 7 years of its life, the tree was obviously in a seed bed or in some other crowded and shaded situation. Its diameter growth of less than 3/10 of an inch per year shows that. In fact, it didn't really start to show normal growth until its 10th year. That might suggest that it was planted on Dublin Road in about 1916 during World War I. At that time, Dublin Road was still a dirt road, and the traffic it witnessed would have been a mixture of horse-drawn vehicles and of various square-cut autos with European names such as Metz, Chevrolet, and La Voiturette. Then, of course, there would be the ultimate American car of its day, the Ford. My maple was just 3 inches in diameter at the time and perhaps 20 feet in height. It overlooked the Dublin Road section of Hollow Hill Road, still dirt road in 1915, but due to be paved the next year. It's not clear whether the tree's placement was preceded or followed by the paving. It's a good bet, however, that the vehicles traveled by in speeds in excess of the 15-mile-per-hour speed limit recently installed in the village. Where my tree spent its first 10 years is a matter of conjecture. Perhaps in the valley along the route of the Marcellus and Otisco Lake Railroad, which daily moved freight and passengers along that scenic valley route. Perhaps on the heights overlooking Otisco Lake, where it could have monitored the daily cruises of the passenger boat Fontenay, an aquatic extension of the railroad. My maple grew almost 8 inches in diameter during the short life of that railroad. By 1930, it had achieved a diameter of nearly 1 foot and a height perhaps of 40 or 50 feet. Our house was built about a decade before the tree was planted to screen it from the road. Sometimes I think we overlook the things a tree can do for us. For most of it, it is shade and beauty. But to me, a tree is an amazing botanical entity, a marvelous example of biological engineering. We take them too much for granted. Why, my tree was as big as a whale, and unlike the whale, which lives in the supporting and cushioning water medium, the maple tree had to stand on end, holding aloft tons of branches and foliage. Every year it did monumental work resisting winds and carrying loads of snow in winter. It is the strategy of the tree's design to allow this. The living, vulnerable part of the tree, the growth points, are always at the surface and peripheral. Only a thin outer layer of the trunk is functional in providing growth and in passing raw materials aloft to the leaf, energy, foodstuff factory, and in carrying the manufactured products to the storage points. The rest of that massive, nearly 4 foot thick trunk served the function of strengthening and storage, providing a bowl that could hold the factory aloft. In fact, the whole woody portion of the tree above the ground and below the ground is ensheathed with a thin cloak of life, inside of which is the heartwood that provides its support. Beneath the ground is a mass of roots, rootlets, and root hairs, as extensive as the aerial part of the tree. The millions of root hairs are like myriad tiny mouths receiving moisture and nutrient. The rest of the root system, the internal woody part, anchors the tree to the ground. All of this so that the foliage factory can do its job, consuming carbon dioxide, producing oxygen, and tremendous amounts of carbohydrates, while housing birds and squirrels and bats, and incidentally providing welcome shade for house and lawn. Every tree that lives for eight decades is an encyclopedia of events and accomplishments. In a sense, cutting a tree is like burning a book, because unlike nature, which reuses it all, we just throw much of it away. It's too bad these things don't mean more to us. That's all I have for today. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.